the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
What a single punt. Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. So glad you could join us with you for the next 60 minutes talking about all things related to the New York Giants. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. And the man to my right is very animated. Why? Because football is back, technically. OTAs are underway here for the New York Giants, Paul.
Yeah, indeed. It is the first day of the official league schedule for the players because the offseason program has begun. Players are lifting, players are going through their calisthenics and doing what it is that they need to do. They are now officially, once again, under the watch of Coach Coughlin and his training staff. However, as you know, the offseason program is still a voluntary deal. They don't get the mandatory until later on, a couple of months down the road.
With the mini camps and so forth.
Exactly. But at the moment, it is a voluntary deal. The bottom line is, though, this place is buzzing with excitement.
Absolutely. A few other notes to mention right off the top, and we're going to be joined momentarily by Todd Palmer of the Kansas City Star, who covers the Missouri football team. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. That's one way to interact with us here on the program. You could also use hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. The schedule is going to officially be released tomorrow night. We just got word, so we'll cover the ins and outs of that later on in the week here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. And check out Giants.com, exclusive photos of some of the players working out during the course of voluntary OTA. So a lot of good new content up on Giants.com. As Paul just mentioned, it is a busy time. It is an exciting time for Big Blue.
Well, you know, really what it comes down to, Lance, for the fans out there, it's kind of like the warm-up right before the NFL draft. Now, you and I both know that's coming up in less than 2 weeks now. I mean, it's going to be here before you know it. And for the last several weeks, there's been a bit of a dearth of NFL news. It's been a little bit of a dry spell, so to speak, and we've tried to keep you going with all the different people who have covered some of the top prospects in the draft. But this is truly now where things start to kind of jostle a little bit. Kind of like when you wake up in the morning, you finally start shaking those covers. This is where it actually starts, the 2015 season. And I will tell you something that's very interesting to me is that, you know, we talk about Tim Tebow, who has made a big splash now, apparently arrived in Philadelphia and is at the Eagles camp at the moment. I don't know if he has officially may sign his contract yet or not. But that is an interesting move that, you know, you don't usually see at this moment in time in the calendar year. You know, right before the draft, things are usually very quiet. Teams are kind of settled into what they're trying to do for their picks, and they're not taking too much time right now to talk about either their own free agents who still haven't signed or free agents on other guys' teams because they're figuring we're going to kind of put everything on hold until after we make our picks, see where we stand, reevaluate, and then you may get some of these guys coming in. But the Eagles wind up making a splash now, apparently, bringing in Tebow today. Again, very odd timing. But as somebody put up on Twitter last night, I think it was Lacanfora, put up that this is a very, very strategic signing for the Eagles because, in fact, if he does sign that contract today, you're looking at the perfect two-point conversion quarterback because that's the kind of stuff he did in college at Florida. And so if the new rules go into play for the point after attempt, they've got themselves a built-in guy who's an expert at running that two-point conversion stuff. If the rules don't get changed to the degree that some people think they will, he could always just go to training camp and, you know, fight for a job. And if he doesn't get a job, he doesn't get a job. He gets cut. No, really no harm, no foul. So interesting thought that Kelly may be trying to outsmart people by bringing in Tebow at this point, thinking ahead with the new potential point-after-attempt rules.
Well, at the end of the day, like you mentioned, we are so far along till we get to the 53-man roster.
Yeah.
At this point, teams like to expand their rosters. They like to go till about 90 guys, and then they're going to slowly cut them down. So even if he signed, which I haven't heard any official word yet, I know there was speculation yesterday, there's no guarantee he's going to make the roster.
No, there's not.
So from an impact standpoint, I think it's extremely premature for everybody to get all worked up about this.
Certainly grabbed a headline, though.
Oh, it did. Well, it's Tim Tebow. It always grabs a headline. But I'm talking about, at least from the Giants' perspective, who knows if they're even going to see him in a Philadelphia uniform if it gets to that point. We're so far along from that standpoint.
Well, I've been telling some people over the course of the last 2 months, as the Giants have signed some of these back end of the depth chart free agents, you'll get some fans who quickly jump and say, well, okay, what's he going to do for us? Well, wait a minute. All that really says is that he's going to be here to compete. It doesn't say anything about him reserving a spot on the 53, and there are a bunch of guys who they signed to fight for spots on the back end of the depth chart. And that's kind of, you know, what you have to keep in mind when you see some of these one-line transactions in the back of the sports pages.
Well, speaking of the depth chart, this is the time where the Giants are starting to look at their depth chart as the voluntary OTAs are underway. So, you know, we've been focusing, Paul, so much over the last few weeks. And we'll take your phone calls on draft prospects and the draft if you want to weigh in on that. But I think, you know, this week especially, it's also an opportunity to start focusing on the actual players that are on the roster that are going to likely make the 53-man group for the New York Giants in terms of the running backs, the quarterbacks, the wide receivers. I think that there's a number of intriguing battles to keep close tabs on as we get set for training camp, as we look ahead to the preseason, which will probably give you maybe a better idea of what direction the Giants would go in the draft. Because there's a variety of different positions that they could look to address, Paul, but at the same time, depth-wise, they have addressed through free agency already.
Well, for me, more so than even the battles that we may see in a couple of months down the road, I'm most curious about the physical updates on some of these fellas. For example, middle linebacker John Beeson is going to be on a conference call with the media very shortly. I'm not letting any cats out of the bag. He's going to be on with the media as the defensive captain of this team. Eli Manning, the offensive captain, is also going to be talking. Eli, do we know we can have that audio up later on the site? Okay, we will. So later on, check on Giants.com. There will be audio of both Manning and Beeson with their media conference calls. You'll be able to listen to it. You don't have to read about it. You can listen to it right from those guys. It'll be here on Giants.com.
Or Paul will be tweeting out a summary later, too.
Doing a show with you. So that's going to be coming up momentarily. And, you know, I think for me, one of the big questions that I would like to ask today, if I was on that call, and I'm not on it because we're doing the show, is, hey, John, how's it coming? You know, how's that foot feeling right now? What are you doing, and are you still on schedule? That's, to me, the most interesting thing, because now you have your first chance or your first opportunity to get the players congregated in one place again, where now they're kind of back under the team umbrella. Because for the last month or so, 2 months, Lance, they've been off on their own. And even though some guys have been around the facility some, again, it's all on their own, doing what they need to do to heal up and to try to, you know, get ready for 2015. So for me, this is the first opportunity to start finding out, okay, which guys are going to be able to participate in training camp? How is some of those hurts coming along? And Beeson, to me, is the one guy I'm looking forward to hearing.
And the other players, obviously, who are working their way back from injuries, Victor Cruz is another
Jeff
name.
Jeff Schwartz.
I think there's a number of players, Paul, as you just alluded to, who are banged up in the later stages of last season that are expected to play prominent roles on this team. And Jeff Schwartz, you know, the question for him is not necessarily just health-wise. And I know he's very active on social media, and he has showcased the fan base, his workout regimen, and so forth. By the looks of that, by the sound of that, he's looked good thus far.
Well, Cruz, too.
Correct.
He's
Cruz
put stuff on the social media
as well. Absolutely.
He seems to think he's had his schedule.
And there is an optimistic feeling surrounding both players. But with Schwartz, not just health-wise, Paul, but also location on the offensive line. Is he going to go back to left guard? Could they move him to right guard? You know, where do you put him into the line, which then obviously impacts the rest of the alignment?
Right. I mean, I think he's made it clear, and based on his play in Kansas City, he's probably best suited to right guard. But the Giants draft is going to have a lot to say about where Jeff Schwartz competes and where probably Justin Pugh competes. You know, the Giants don't have that offensive line totally set yet, and by the time they get a new player or two in here, we're going to see where those battles start to unfold. Remember, John Jerry is back as well, re-signed a one-year deal.
Correct.
To try to compete at least one of the guard positions.
Now you look at the roster right now as we have in front of us. I mean, there are so many other guys looking to bounce back from injuries which were not necessarily as severe as some of the others.
Hot off the presses. The first official
right off the printer.
2015 roster. We have
it
right here,
there,
folks.
Paul, I don't want you to hurt yourself.
And by the way, just so folks know, you know, as we look at this, and I know Nile's real good about putting up the number changes and stuff as they come in from the uniform department, equipment department, the Skibas. There are several guys on here, Kopong, Jones, Gordy, Wade. They're at the moment, they're duplicate number guys. So, you know, there's a lot of competition to be had. Let's put it that way.
In terms of other injuries, Tremaine McBride coming back from a season-ending injury. He's another player that we should know about that. How about Robert Ayers? He also suffered a season-ending injury. So, you know, these are other players that obviously the Giants are looking forward to getting back in the mix. And, you know, a general question we'll throw out. Feel free to weigh in on the lines at 201-939-4513 as well as Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. Paul and I want to hear from you. I mean, what player are you anxious to see get back out on the field during the course of voluntary OTAs? And who do you think should be a big focus point during this offseason period to really set the tone for the Giants moving forward?
You know, I'm very curious when we hear from Eli today on his media conference call as to what he's been able to do, if anything, with the receivers. Because, you know, he always has the Manning passing camp with his brother Peyton. And Eli does try to, at least if not for 1 week, maybe in other instances, it's an individual session. He does try to, on his own, hook up with the receivers during the offseason to just be able to get some throws in. It's a chemistry thing, and quite honestly, Eli is so studious about the game, he wants to draw those receivers into those work habits. So I'd be kind of curious to hear from Eli specifically, because, we've seen some things on social media that some of the guys were with him recently. I'd like to know a little bit more about who's been working out with him and how they've looked and how much have they done.
And speaking of just the receiver group as a whole, Paul, you know, a lot of people are speculating if Amari Cooper is there. You know, we've had plenty of conversations. Should the Giants target a wide receiver? How about the guys currently on the roster, Paul? You know, we always focus on the big name stars, the Victor Cruzes, the Odell Beckhams. I'm very interested to see how the back end of this core plays out during the course of OTAs and training camp, because Dwayne Harris was just brought in, and another player, speaking of the injury bug, how about Marcus Harris, Soup, who also has an opportunity, I think, if he could pick up where he left off during the course of preseason last year, he could very well make an impact this year.
He certainly was on his way to having a realistic chance of making the roster when he hurt his knee. And you know, everyone felt bad for him because he's such a good guy. What a really, really cool guy he is. But the bottom line is, you know, he needs to prove himself now all over again because he's coming off of knee surgery. I mean, like everybody who gets hurt, you kind of start from square one.
Yeah.
You know, you don't get any mulligans on this. They need production, and they need to know that you can do it now, and you can stay on the field, you know. I think the Dwayne Harris thing, if I might add, I just saw a comment the other day, I think it was might have been Goslin from the Dallas Morning News, who was commenting that the Cowboys are going to be much more hurt by the loss of Dwayne Harris than most people think, and that the Giants will benefit a lot more from Dwayne Harris than most people think. His remark was that a lot of folks around the league were snuffing off that signing as a frivolous and overpriced signing, and why did the Giants, you know, do this? It didn't seem like a real smart move. And his comment was along the lines of, you better wake up on this one because it does make the Giants significantly better in a lot of different ways. And it really does hurt the Cowboys because they're scrambling trying to fill those roles.
Well, and probably what he was trying to hit on, I didn't see the comment, is special teams.
No question.
That's the area, Paul, and I've emphasized this on Twitter to Giants fans a lot because they have raised the same questions and comments that you just threw out. You got to look at his special teams numbers. You don't normally take a look at guys and how they tackle on special teams or what they do in terms of the return game. Forget his average return numbers, and that is impressive. How about the fact that he was the gunner on special teams, and he essentially led the Cowboys or was number one or number two in each of his seasons there?
Without a question. And again, the other bonus to all of this, and we've talked about it since the day he signed, is that by putting him back in there in the return game, you can get Beckham off the field. You don't have to use Odell Beckham now in returns if you don't want to. And I'm sorry, but I think there's some benefit to that.
Absolutely. You want to preserve your top wideouts. Though I will say, you know, you also want to make sure you have your best playmakers on the field at the same time. And you look at the Steelers with Antonio Brown.
Right.
While there's always a risk that somebody's going to get hurt, I don't think it's a crime to give opportunities to your best athlete as well, Paul, at the same time.
Yeah, but I think that Harris is an explosive enough return guy that you're really not losing a whole lot by putting him out there. And if it's really kind of six of one and half a dozen of the other, then why throw Beckham out there? I think that's probably what the Giants are hoping. They want Harris to show the same explosiveness on specials here that he has shown with the Cowboys in the first few years of his career, because if that's the case, and that's why they signed him, then he will be able to move Beckham over to the bench and get him out of harm's way in those situations.
And the way I look at Harris, you know his track record with special teams. The added bonus is if he gets the call and an opportunity to be that fourth wide receiver.
He can play it.
He can play it. He's capable of playing it. So that's I look at as an added bonus. Meaning,
no question.
If you get that, great. If you don't, you know he's going to give you something on special teams.
Yeah, and again, the receiving part comes into play because you just don't know exactly what Victor Cruz is going to bring, and not only bring, but when he's going to bring it. I mean, you know, we all want to be optimistic about Cruz, but it would not at all surprise, I don't think a lot of people, if he missed training camp and if he missed the preseason and maybe even wound up starting the season on pop. I don't think that's out of the question, given the nature of the very serious injury he's coming back from. And if that should happen, the Giants are going to need some production from the back end of that depth chart at wide receiver. And Harris is the kind of guy who they will call upon and say, look, we're a little short right now. Give us some numbers. Give us some production. And at least they know that Harris has the capability of doing that.
So with OTAs getting underway today, we're discussing the makeup of the Giants roster, going over some of the players that are looking to bounce back from injury. Want to hear your thoughts on who you're looking forward to seeing get back in the thick of things as OTAs start up. We're going to open up the phone lines at 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. So glad you could join us for Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. To get us going here on a Monday, we check in with Dre in Atlanta. Dre, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, El Boogie? What's going on, Peter?
Hey, how are you?
Well, Dre, what do you got for us?
All right. Got a quick question. Two parts. One, Peter, I know you're kind of OCD when it comes to evaluating some of these guys coming out of the draft. Sell me on Trey Waynes or Byron Jones.
Well,
do we lose anything if we grab either one?
Let me put it to you this way. I am a Waynes guy. I think that this corner out of Michigan State reminds me a lot of Sam Madison. He is very confident. He's very sure of himself. He plays with passion, with a good motor. He's not afraid to hit people. He's very sticky, likes man-to-man and press coverage. He is by far the most all-around skilled and pro-ready corner coming out of this draft. And so, to be honest with you, if you believe what I believe about the four core positions that you need to have when you look for the foundation of a good team, cover corner is one of them. Considering DRC was injured a great part of last season, Prince Amukamara was injured for a great part of last season, and Trumaine McBride is coming back off of injury from last season, you could certainly make a case that the Giants have need that does meet the value of Waynes, who probably is right around that 8 to 10 to 12 area. So as much as you know, I would love to take Sheriff with the number 9 pick. If he's not there and the Giants would wind up taking the corner, I would not at all be shaking my head at that deal because I see the value and I do see the need. So that's my take on Waynes. I would absolutely not blink at that pick because, as you know also, 60% of the time in this game, you're playing three corners.
Yeah.
Because of the way the game has developed. And a lot of the times, and I don't have the numbers now. I think it's 60% for three corners. I forget what the number is now for four. When teams are going to full spread four wide, is that like 25, 30%?
I believe it's in that ballpark.
It's pretty high.
Yeah.
So even if McBride makes it back and he's really, you know, and he's got it going, that doesn't mean that Waynes isn't going to see time. I mean, at the very least, he starts out as a rookie, maybe as the fourth corner, and plays in the spread.
You find a way for great players to get on the field. One other thing I want to piggyback off of what Paul just said, and then we'll let you continue, Dre, is keep in mind, not that it's a major concern, but Jones, he missed the last few games of the 2014 season after going under shoulder surgery.
Right.
So that at least is something to keep in mind compared to Waynes, who didn't necessarily have to go through that.
Sure.
Right. And my next question is, it seemed like a foregone conclusion that we need, you know, I think cornerback would be great. But my thing is, what's the odds of Jayron Holmes making this roster this year? Because I think we struck out with him. You know, he didn't measure up to what I thought he was going to be when he was drafted. And then with the substance abuse issues,
you and I are on the same page with that, because when Hosley came out of school, I thought he had all the skills to be a terrific cover corner in this league, and I still think he has those skills. The problems have been manyfold. You certainly have the suspension. That's not cool. The fact that he's been banged up and hurt for a lot of the time he's been here, that hasn't been cool. The fact that combined those things, and in addition to the fact that he didn't play very well when he got an opportunity to get in there a little bit, it whittled away at his confidence. And I'm going to tell you something. I don't care if it's Lance, Dottino, Nele, Schmelk, or Anita playing corner. The bottom line is, if you don't have confidence, you've got no chance to survive in this league as a corner. You have zero, absolutely zero. And his confidence has been so whittled away that they got to start from scratch with him. The best thing that probably could have happened is that there's a new defensive coordinator in town in Steve Spagnuolo, who now Hosley, if he's serious and he wants a job here, there's certainly room on the depth chart for him. But he's going to have to prove it starting at square one, fresh start with a brand new coordinator. He's got to prove step by step by step that he deserves to be on this team and that he belongs on the field. I think he's got the skill set, but now it's a show-me situation.
Also should note there's a new cornerbacks coach, too, in Tim Walton.
Yeah.
So he has an opportunity to prove himself to a new positional coach. He has an opportunity to prove himself to a new defensive coordinator. Sometimes you get a fresh start, even though it's the same team, it could re-energize a player. But this is that show-me type of a season. I would agree with Paul and Dre. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. This is definitely one of those seasons where the opportunity is there, the writing is on the wall, he could solidify a depth area in the cornerback situation, but if they draft somebody again, Paul, then all of a sudden you're lighting some fire up, you know what, for him to get going again.
You know, I often call those types of guys show-me players. That's the name that I tag on them. Reuben Randle was a show-me player last year. Well, he showed me something, but I still need to see more consistency. So another show-me year for Reuben Randle. And again, you're talking about Hosley. Clearly, he's a show-me player.
Whenever you have these rookies who have been with the team for the last few years, as they get to the tail end of their rookie deal, they have to prove that they warrant the spot, and they also maybe warrant consideration to being brought back. And I think all of the rookies that are on this team, when I say rookies, meaning guys who were brought in maybe 2 or 3 years ago that haven't necessarily stamped out a specific role on this team.
Well, I'll be honest with you. Demontre Moore is a show-me player. Demontre Moore has all the skills to be a double-digit sack guy. And I swear by that. I watch this kid's athleticism, his physical tools. He's got it all. But he's got to grow up and mature, and he's got to put a little more power on, no question about that. But it's still doable. It's still there. The question is he going to show me in 2015?
I would put Hosley in that category. I'd put Moore in that category. And this player we probably have brought up every single season, but I'm going to throw Adrian Robinson out there again too, Paul. And I know that they have good players at the top of the depth chart who have been impactful in guys like Dinnell and obviously Fells, but you still want everybody on the depth chart to be thrown in there, whether it be on special teams or as an offensive or defensive player, and make an impact. So Robinson I would put in that category too. There's a number of young guys that perhaps can really carve out a more significant role on this team.
Now quickly, we have a tweet from Mr. Ruiz 81 says he's sorry he's not going to crow about Dwayne Harris until he sees him on the field. The only thing I could tell you about that, and if you want to put him in a show-me category, that's fair because he hasn't shown it to you as a Giant yet. But trust me when I tell you, he had some pretty good grades coming out of school. And when he got to the Cowboys, they were extremely happy to have him. And, you know, he was a guy who you may not have thought about as a fan when you played the Cowboys, you know, but trust me when I tell you, the coaches would always think about him in the back of their mind. This is a guy who can hurt us more on the punt return and kick
field
return.
Field position, that's where he kills you.
As field position. Big-time field position guy. Tom Coughlin emphasizes field position. It's a very big part of what he believes in. And because of his ability not just to return but to be the gunner, he is a very, very big factor in that field position game. And trust me, the Giants were very concerned about field position when they played the Cowboys the last couple of years, and they were very much wary of what Harris could do to change the entire flow and tempo of the game by his impact on field position.
Well, especially how balanced the Cowboys' offense was this season. The last thing you want to do is give them a gift where they have to go half the field, especially with the two games that transpired in 2014. In terms of that last tweet, Paul, I don't think he's a show-me player on special teams. If you want to classify Harris as a show-me player, as a receiver, that's fair. And I just brought up his numbers, and we mentioned this off the top. He only has 33 career receptions between 2012, 2013, and 2014 on 57 targets for 418 yards and 3 touchdowns. His best season was 2012 when he had 17 receptions for 222 yards. The last two seasons, 9 and 7 receptions, respectively. But a lot of it is the lack of opportunity. It's not that he didn't come through.
Look who's getting the ball.
Exactly. I mean, think about who's in front of him on the depth chart. Dez Bryant, Jason Witten, Terrence Williams, Cole Beasley. There's a number of other guys. And I'm not saying that he's going to jump ahead of everybody else here on the roster.
All he's got to do is be the 3 or the 4.
There you go. And in the opportunities in which he's called upon, like Preston Parker was last season, that's when you want a player like Dwayne Harris to elevate his game. If he could do that, then I think it's well worth it.
And here's what you want to keep in mind about him. He's got the quickness, the elusiveness, the speed. He's got that yak yardage capability, which Preston Parker is more of just a possession guy who's going to catch the ball. He's going to be tough. He's going to go over the middle. He's going to get you that first down. But Harris can do a little bit more jukeability stuff after he gets the ball. So that's the answer, Mr. Ruiz, as far as I'm concerned. If you want to say he's a show-me player as a receiver, I guess that's fair. But I think you're going to be pretty happy.
We'll get to more of your tweets in a second. I want to head back to the phone lines right now. We have Vic in Florida. Vic, what's happening?
Hey, how you guys doing, Paul?
Hi.
And Lance?
Doing well, Vic.
I'm kind of stuck at the pick for the Giants at 9. Even though I would like to see Sheriff being picked, but then I think about the fact that the Giants have to play the Eagles twice, the Cowboys twice, the Redskins twice, and they all have good running games. What about a guy like Danny Shelton, who's tremendous as a run stopper, and he's also a great pass rusher, very good academically from what I understand. What do you guys think about that?
Why don't you start this one?
Well, in terms of Shelton, I would agree with you. I think he's very effective against the run, and as I've mentioned on this program time and time again, though, the one thing that you have to keep in mind, his stock rose exponentially between the end of the 2013 season and the end of the 2014 season. Prior to that, he really was an unknown commodity. So it's amazing how far along he has come. He is definitely in that ballpark of where the Giants are going to draft. But if you're going to prioritize need, and I think you need to do that, even though the Giants' philosophy has always been best player available, I think they've made enough inroads during the course of free agency. And also you need to take into consideration what Jonathan Hankins did last year, where he had a terrific sophomore campaign with the Giants. If you were to rank, Vic, the needs, forget best player available. Let's just go with needs. Would you put defensive tackle as one of the top two necessities for the Giants as the roster stands right now? That would be my question back to you. Apparently,
yes, I
silence
would.
Vic.
You
okay,
would.
You would put that. So, just out of curiosity, what is number one? I'm assuming that is that the number two need in your mind?
Probably number two. I still like the Sheriff player, but if he's not available, then I would have to go with a guy like Danny Shelton or Shane Ray. Guys like they can stop the run and be great at their position.
Let me just throw this back at you again, because it's a great exercise for you to start thinking about. How about the corner position? Because if Shelton is graded, as I think a lot of people think, about a top 10, top 12 pick, and you know, Waynes is also in that vicinity. Well, now, if they're both on the same grade plane, now need does have to come into play. Don't you think that with Bromley and Hankins and Jenkins and Ellis, the Giants already have four defensive tackles, not even counting Marcus Kuhn, they already have four DTs in that rotation.
Yeah.
And to my knowledge, all those guys are healthy. You know, you're talking about corners right now where your top three guys are all coming off of injury. So I think it's hard for me to put defensive tackle ahead of cornerback right now.
Okay, I understand your point. I get your point, Paul. One question I have for you, Paul, this goes back a little ways. Do you remember a defensive tackle, number 77,
Troy Archer,
was killed in a car accident?
Troy Archer, sure do.
Yes, you got it.
Yeah,
thank you for taking my call,
all right,
guys, and have a great day.
You as well. Thanks
sure
so much,
thing.
Vic.
Troy Archer, when the Giants had moved to Giant Stadium in 76, shortly thereafterwards, they drafted this real stud of a defensive tackle who was a bit of a wild guy. Had a high motor on the field and off. And unfortunately for the Giants, even though I think he might have been the all-rookie team when he got here, he was a terrific prospect. A couple of years into his career, he was tragically killed in a Jeep accident locally here in Bergen County. And, you know, it was just one of the many players over the years that, you know, met a very sad fate. Giants have had guys like, you know, Doug Coder, John Tuggle, Dan Lloyd, who have come down with illness, you know, cancer and illnesses and things of that nature. But Troy Archer was killed in a car wreck, and boy, he was going to be a good one.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We've got Jeff in New Hampshire. Jeff, what's happening? Jeff, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I hear you loud and clear, Jeff. What's happening?
Beautiful. Not much. I was actually going to change it up from the draft and talk about the roster with the training.
We welcome that change. So what do you have?
We have the roster.
Awesome.
We have the roster.
All right, I'll do that. I was going to piggyback off the last caller because I'm kind of a Shelton guy, too, and I've got a different way of looking at it and different argument for it, but I'll come back to that another day. Looking at the roster we have, I read a lot of the previews on NFL.com, looking at teams' rosters and all these other things, and I feel like a lot of people are all kind of overlooking us this year, saying we don't have that talented a roster and all this other stuff. And I'm not trying to be an over-optimist, thinking we're the best team in the league by any means, but I think we're a lot better than people are giving us credit for, and I think our roster looks a lot better. Obviously, we have to assume guys are healthy, I mean, but you can say that about any team in the league. And I don't like leaning on the injuries as excuses as a rule, but when you look at our injuries last year, I mean, it's ridiculous. It's not just numbers. It's important players.
Absolutely.
It wasn't like it was our third stringers getting hurt.
I agree.
So like I tell my Cowboy fan cousin when he tells me I'm just using that as an excuse, well, take DeMarco Murray, Dez Bryant, Zach Martin off the Cowboys offense and tell me how good they were.
Look.
That was our number one running back, our number one wide receiver, and our number one offensive lineman right off the top, gone.
Here's what you have to remember, and you can spout this to him like a parrot if you like. Dan Reeves used to say, as far as injuries are concerned, you can't use them as an excuse, but sometimes they are a reason. And honestly, that statement makes a whole lot of sense to me. And as John Mara himself said, the last 2 years, the Giants have lost more manpower games to injury than anybody in the NFL.
Oh, it's unbelievable. I mean, look at Seattle's defense. If you take their three of their top four corners off their roster, take their starting middle linebacker off the roster, take their leading pass rusher out, even with the talent and depth they had, they wouldn't have been the best defense in the league. They were missing their middle linebacker in the start. They started the season 3-3.
Correct.
He's like the captain and the leader on that
Bobby
defense.
Bobby Wagner. Yeah.
That makes a huge difference. So it's really, like you said, it's not an excuse, but it's reality. I mean, it is what it is. So if we assume all our players are healthy and they can stay healthy, that's as good a roster as there is, especially in our division. And the other thing I hear a lot of people talk when they talk about our roster in the offseason, I hear a lot of people bashing our free agent signings and, oh, we didn't have a great offseason, we didn't get a lot of good free agents, blah, blah, blah. I just don't understand that assessment either. And I think it goes back to when I called a couple weeks ago talking about how, you know, fans only want playmakers in the draft. They don't care about the linemen because, you know, they don't make the highlight reel and because they don't score your points in fantasy football. I think the same thing is true with an offseason. If you don't go out and make a big splash or make big waves or sign big-name players, people assume you had a bad offseason. Well, you know who used to make a splash every offseason? Dan Snyder and the Redskins. Who spent more money on more players and had them flop than that guy?
Well, the Eagles did that, too, with the best team money could buy a couple of years ago, and it didn't work out.
The dream team.
Here's what I tell people. I think the Giants have filled a lot of cracks in the wall during this offseason, but they still have holes remaining. And that's the difference. You know, the holes are bigger splash guys. The cracks are back end of the depth chart guys. But you still got to improve the back end of the 53, too, if you're going to be a playoff team.
Because you need to protect yourself from injuries. Jeff, you need to keep in mind, and I agree with basically everything you've said, they lost significant impactful players last year. We're not talking about the fourth or fifth corner. We're talking about starting corners.
Middle linebacker, too.
Correct. There's a distinct difference when you lose that. But I would agree with Paul's point that at the same time, you need to realize, well, that third and fourth corner is just as valuable as perhaps the guys who start, because you have to know going into every NFL season you're bound to lose a player or two. That's just the nature of the sport.
And that's why they're signing guys. They're not signing the big names. They're signing guys for depth. They're signing guys for competition. They're going to add more in the draft. That's why drafting well in rounds 3 through 7 is just as important as round 1. So they're doing those things. But you look at the players we had, and I think we had this – and you look at some of the more successful teams, they don't have a lot of players in the offseason because they have their core together. If our guys are healthy, that's keeping our core together, and then it's just a matter of filling guys in. Now, Shane Vereen, I think, is going to be one of the best offseason signings you could ask for with what he can do in the passing game. He's perfectly fit out for the offense we're trying to run. You guys have been talking about Dwayne Harris a lot and, obviously how he changes the game in special teams. How about having a wide receiver that can block? I mean, how important was David Tyree for us in the running game all the years we had him?
Great example. Great example. And honestly, that's kind of what I see in Dwayne Harris.
That's what I see, too, when they get him.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at our team that won the 2 Super Bowls recently, we didn't have a ridiculous amount of superstars. Every team has their stars, but
sure. We
had a lot more. I mean, look at our 07 team. We had one guy in the Pro Bowl in 07. They played well together. Obviously, guys played above that, but it was the role players that stepped up. It was the middle-of-the-road guys. It was the depth. It was all that stuff. It was playing well as a team together. It's not about putting the most superstars on a roster because, like the Eagles showed us a few years, that doesn't work.
And that's exactly why Harris fits in the mold of the Tyrese, the Dominic Hicksons of the world.
Exactly.
Who really help complete the package.
Those complimentary players. And, Jeff, listen, we got some more callers on the line, and we have a guest coming up, so I got to let you go. But appreciate the phone call. It's important to have that versatility. It's important to have those complimentary players who can sort of be a jack-of-all-trades. We're going to get to more of your phone calls in a little bit. We'll extend the show a little bit if need be, because I know a lot of people on the line. But right now, as we teased off the top of the show, each and every day we are previewing a new group of prospects. Today we're going to focus on Missouri, and we are joined right now by Todd Palmer of the Kansas City Star, who covers the Missouri football team here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Todd, Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino with you. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Good. How are you guys?
Doing very well, Todd. A number of prospects coming out of Missouri. We want to get your feedback on a number of these guys who obviously should be around in the ballpark of where the Giants selected number 9. And probably the one player in particular who has been getting a lot of attention is Shane Ray, the defensive end. I'm going to start with perhaps maybe an unusual question. You've seen both of these players very closely over the last 2 years. But if you use for comparison's sake, Michael Sam was the SEC Defensive Player of the Year in 2013. He was looked at as a tweener. Now you have Ray, the 2014 SEC Defensive Player of the Year. In football, we look at track records. We look at common themes. How different are these two players, and why shouldn't anyone assume, well, Michael Sam didn't necessarily translate well to the NFL, so is there some fear surrounding a guy like Ray?
I don't think there should be. I mean, they're two completely different caliber of athletes. When you talk about speed, when you talk about, instincts, coming off the edge. I mean, Shane Ray has one of the best first steps of anybody, maybe the best first step, had the best get-off in this class. Both guys have relentless motors, but Michael Sam, he was a very productive player, but a lot of his production, if you go back and look, he had 3 sacks against, an Arkansas State and a Vanderbilt. And, he had a big sack at the end of the Cotton Bowl, but he put up some big numbers against some teams that, and plus he had Tony Ealy on the other side. Let's not forget that. He had a great season with Carolina. But he put up some numbers against some teams that weren't necessarily high profile. Shane, on the other hand, was pretty consistent throughout the year. There were a lot of times teams went away from him which, you know, allowed Marcus Golden on the other side to rack up some pretty nice numbers as well. But Shane is just a completely different caliber of athlete. He's a lot more capable of making drops. You know, he can be of value in coverage. Michael Sam was a little bit stiff and a little bit too slow. They tried to, you know, work him out a little bit as a 3-4 outside linebacker at the Senior Bowl, and it didn't work very well at all. I mean, he's just not the same caliber of athlete at all.
Well, let me ask you this along the same lines then. Where do you see him fitting in the NFL? Is he better as a 3-4 outside linebacker, a 4-3 outside linebacker, or as people love to use with all these tweeners guys, they like to throw them up on the defensive end spot, and they sometimes want to put their hands in the ground. Where would you see the best fit in the pro game for him?
For Shane Ray or for Michael Sam?
No, not Michael Sam, for Shane Ray.
I think Shane can be a 3-4 outside linebacker because I think he's got the speed to cover guys coming out of the backfield. You could use him a little bit like Tom Holly or Justin Houston gets used here with the Chiefs, where he's primarily just a rush backer. There's a knock on him that, you know, people say he can't play the run, but look, I saw him a lot of times. Guys would try to bounce outside, and Shane Ray would just blow up plays. Shane's very good against the run. He's stronger than he gets credit for, and he knows how to use his speed. So I think he fits best as a 4-3 defensive end, maybe. But he can certainly play 3-4 outside linebacker. And, you know, a lot of times that's a hybrid position now anyway in the NFL. And he's a guy, I think, that can, with his speed and athleticism, can do pretty much anything you ask him to do on the edge there.
Now, the Tigers, Todd, also have another defensive end who played on the opposite side, Marcus Golden. His numbers don't jump off the page, but from what I read, it's similar to the description you used with Ray and Sam, relentless, high motor. What about his upside? How do you see him translating to the next level?
He's probably a middle-round pick, but he's a guy, again, that I think he's very productive. He plays with a high motor. He loves football. He's a lot faster than he gets credit for. I mean, he was a running back in high school and a very good one, and he used to return kicks and stuff like that. I remember there was he was a little bit hurt. He had a hamstring issue this year that really limited his production in October. But if you go back and look at his junior year tape, there's a play against Toledo where he's rushing, and Toledo was using the quick passing game to try to keep the Missouri rush from getting to the quarterback. And Marcus Golden read the play. The quarterback tried to throw a swing pass over him. He tipped it to himself and raced 70 yards for a touchdown. That's pretty impressive for a defensive end. I mean, he's a 260-pound guy who outran the entire offense. He's a guy. He's not quite the same caliber of athlete as Shane Ray. But he's a guy that, look, you need a lot of guys to rotate through on that defensive line. And he's a guy that has some versatility. He can play the run. He can get after the quarterback. He's not an elite pass rusher, but because he plays with such a high motor, he can get you a few sacks just through effort.
Now, Tom, I got to ask you, Mitch Morse is an interesting guy to me because I think he's a third-day pick. Not the greatest athlete, but nasty and smart, a guy who I think could project potentially as a naked player on somebody's 53, maybe as a guard, because he is powerful and, again, smart and nasty. I'd like some of your thoughts on him, because I do think the Giants still need to fortify their offensive line. Not only would I like to see them take Sheriff in the first round out of Iowa, but I wouldn't mind them taking another offensive lineman on the third day. Morse could be a guy they'd be interested in. What do you see in him?
Well, I'm hearing that he might be, he might sneak into day two. He's really been rising fast. He's a very, very strong guy. Benches over 500 pounds. Very powerful guy. He played some center. He played right tackle. He played left tackle at Missouri. Probably projects best as a guard. But he's got the size to play guard. He's over 300 pounds, so he can handle that. He's a very, very intelligent player. And if you look at his combine numbers, I mean, people say on tape they didn't think he was that athletic and things like that, but his combine numbers were as good as any offensive lineman. I mean, he was one of the top eight in terms of, I think he was second in the bench press with 36 reps, and he was top eight in his three cone, his 20-yard shuttle, and his 40 time. He's a better athlete, I think, than he gets credit for. And, you know, you look at a guy like Justin Britt. I mean, he's kind of cut from that same mold. A lot of people were surprised. They thought Justin Britt was maybe fourth, fifth, sixth round, somewhere in the middle round. The Seahawks ended up taking him in the second round, and he started right tackle for the NFC champion last year, all 16 games. I think Mitch Morse, I don't know that I, you know, I'm not going to say that he's going to come in and start all 16 games as a rookie like Justin Britt did, but I definitely think he's got value. And I think a lot of NFL teams were very impressed with him at the scouting combine. I know for a fact that he knocked out his interviews because he's a tremendous kid. You know, he's a really grounded kid, too. He's got a brother who there was an accident when he was a child, and his brother is, you know, he's mentally disabled. And, you know, Mitch is, he's got such compassion and such caring, and it's really made him grow up a little bit. So he's a very mature kid. But when you get him out there on the football field, he's incredibly strong. He's very difficult to move. He's got great hand placement. I think he's got a lot of value for a team in the NFL.
Talking with Todd Palmer, who covers the Missouri Tigers football team for the Kansas City Star. At the wide receiver position, Doriel Green Beckham, obviously he was thrown off the team. He enrolled at Oklahoma, but you've seen him when he did perform for the Tigers. There's been concerns, obviously, about the off-the-field issues. Where do you see him falling in this draft, Todd? And, I mean, is there enough upside with this skill set that it's worth the risk, even though there's a lot of baggage?
Me, personally, I would not take him in the first round just because of all that baggage, and because I think there are some limitations on the field in terms of what he can do. But look, the kid's 6'6", runs like a gazelle, you know, can go high point the ball. You know, he's a very gifted physical specimen, so I wouldn't be shocked at all if, you know, some NFL team looks at that and says, you know what, we can help this kid mature, and we can, you know, we can turn him into one of the best wide receivers in the game. Because talent-wise, he is one of the top wide receivers in a very deep wide receiver class. But, you know, that, I think that the fact that it's a deep class also hurts him because there are so many questions off the field. He's not a great route runner. You know, I worry about his ability to, you know, grasp all the intricacies of an NFL offense, you know, and so I think that he may be a little bit you know, slower to develop just because I think it's going to take him some time to get up to speed, especially because, look, he sat out a year. You know, he really only played one position, the X receiver, at Missouri. So, you know, if you're looking for a guy that you can move around the field and, you know, look for different matchups, I think you're going to have to really work with a guy like Doriel Green Beckham to get him there. You know, like I said, talent-wise, he's as good as anybody. Look, I haven't talked to him since he went to Oklahoma, really, so I don't know. Maybe he's matured. Maybe he's grown up a little bit. I know he's having a baby, you know. But and there's a chance that he could emerge as one of the, you know, one of the best wide receivers in this class. But I think there are a lot of red flags. I would be leery of spending a first-round pick on him because I don't think he's a guaranteed thing in the NFL.
I got one more player for you from Missouri, and he's not necessarily a guy the Giants are going to look at because I think they're set at this type of skill set. But Marcus Murphy is a very interesting player for me because he's done so many big things and been involved in so many big plays with the Tigers. I'm not so sure that he has a fit in the NFL in terms of his durability or in terms of his just flat-out speed and quickness, but I know he certainly lit up a lot of headlines when he was playing in college.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought him up because Murph is a great kid. He's the kind of kid, if you spend any time around college, you know, there's always one or two kids on the team who every time you ask them a question, it's yes, sir, no, sir, you know, and they're just really enthusiastic. That's Marcus Murphy. I mean, you know, he comes from a good family. He's a great character kid. And I think he's got value as a return specialist for somebody.
Okay.
You know, now that's kind of a luxury pick on a 53-man roster. But look, he played some slot receiver at Missouri. He played some running back. He doesn't have ideal size, you know, but he was actually a little more durable than I think he gets credit for because he was pretty good at avoiding the big hits. They've had some running backs like Russell Hansborough and Henry Josie who were on the smaller side at Missouri who've had more consistent issues. Obviously, Josie destroyed his knee as a sophomore. And then Russell Hansborough always had like a nagging shoulder and things like that. Murphy, you know, he's a game changer, though, in terms of his returnability, because anytime he gets the ball on a punt return or kick return situation, he has the ability to take it to the house. And, you know, I mean, he's not getting a lot of you know, the Tyler Lockett's and the Ty Montgomery's at Stanford are getting more of the talk. But I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, and he may not get drafted, but I think Marcus Murphy will get a shot in camp somewhere.
Yeah, I think so, too.
And I think he'll have a chance to turn some heads. I think the key for a guy like Marcus Murphy is he's going to have to show that he can also maybe be a gunner on special teams,
right? Yeah.
You know, or something like that, to show that he's got more value than just as a return guy. But he's a guy, you know, I mean, there's a lot of guys in the league that are this way now. You look at, you know, a Darren Sproles, you look at a DeAnthony Thomas, you know, guys that, you know, you can line him up in the backfield, motion him out, you know, he can kind of become a matchup nightmare if you get him against the right guy defensively. I think Marcus Murphy is a potential home run hitter, you know, and he's a guy that, you know, has some value, like maybe, you know, Dexter McCluster or something like that.
Yeah,
and I'll even throw out two other names. With the Falcons, they had a Jaquizz Rodgers or an Antone Smith, guys that weren't necessarily going to handle the ball for 10 or 15 carries per game. Todd, really appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, not a problem, guys.
You got it. Todd Palmer, thanks, Todd, who covers the Missouri Tigers for the Kansas City Star, nice enough to provide some insight on some of the prospects to keep close tabs on coming out of Mizzou. We're going to close out the program with your phone calls, 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. I know a number of you have weighed in on Twitter in terms of the players you want to see make an impact during voluntary OTAs and training camp. We'll get to those tweets in a minute, but a few of you have been holding for some time on the lines. Let's go to Portland, New York, where Dennis is. Dennis, what's happening?
How you doing, guys?
Doing well, Dennis. What do you got for us?
Hey, I just wanted to tell Paul, I'm glad he's on today. Listen to him talk about Brandon Scherff for the last couple weeks. It's the first time I ever called him, but I listen to you guys all the time. And it's, you know, I heard Paul say it's hard to get excited about you know, an offensive lineman. But if you go online and you watch Brandon Scherff's highlight reel, I think you can get excited about an offensive lineman. I was laughing out loud sometimes watching this guy pummel people into the ground. Some little safety comes up on him, and he buries him, and it sits on him, and does all kinds of ungodly things to him. So pretty exciting to watch that. So I think I'm on board with Paul now, so I won't cry if we take Scherff at nine.
Well, I appreciate that. And you know, it's amazing. You're trying to make an analogy. It's almost like Godzilla rampaging through Tokyo, the way he gobbles some guys up, you know?
Absolutely, Paul. Actually, one other quick comment for you, more of a technical thing. I usually listen to you guys the day later, and I missed Friday's show, and I don't know if anybody noticed, but Friday's show is about 3 seconds long. You hear Tom Coughlin say, go to work, men, and then it ends. So anybody could get Friday's episode back up on audio, I'll listen to that later.
We will certainly look into that. Not a problem. Appreciate you bringing that to us, to our attention, Dennis. Thanks so much for weighing in.
All right, thanks a lot, guys.
You got it.
Just commenting on the John Beeson conference call. If you're following Giants.com, again, we'll have the audio up there. Eli Manning is going to be coming on momentarily. We'll get to all of that stuff after we're done with our program. But clearly, Beeson very excited, says he's a big fan of Antonio Pierce and defensive coordinator Steve Spagnuolo, says injuries are by chance. Hardest part is not being able to simulate tackling. But in terms of gauging his progress, he says he feels great where he is. And obviously he's going to be a very, very important part for the Giants as they move forward.
And the key is slow progression. This is not the time where you want to rush anybody, Paul. The bottom line is you want to make sure that they last. You want to make sure they're healthy and ready to go in training camp.
April.
Absolutely. So there still is some time. And I know Giants fans, you know, they're worked up. They want to hear that this guy's ready to go. But also keep in mind, we've got a long way till we get to training camp where the pads go on and they actually start pushing each other around.
Sure.
So you have to at least keep that in perspective. Frank is in Tampa. Frank, welcome aboard. What's happening?
Thanks, guys. Thanks,
hi,
guys. You know, I worry so much about this draft because I think it is just so important to our future. We have one good one under our belt. You know, if you go back and look at 11 and 12, those drafts equal the 13 and 14 seasons, which were disasters. And, you know, I just had to go back and take a look to see if were they really as bad as I thought. And, You know, in 11, we got Prince, then we got Marvin Austin, Jernigan, James Brewer, Greg Jones, Tyler Sash. Then in 12, we had Wilson, Randall Hosley, Adrian Robinson, Brendan Mosley, Matt McCants. Out of those two drafts, we have one current starter and a number three receiver, and that's it. So I think that this draft is so important. If we put these another good one together now in 15 and 16, hopefully we've got winning seasons. So I wanted to ask you guys, do you think in terms of, I know you were talking earlier about Wayne's, can we afford, first of all, I don't know, maybe you guys can tell me, I don't have time to study like you guys do, can Wayne's play the slot? Because otherwise I don't know how we can afford with the problems we have to draft a third cornerback. And can you tell me, at Prince, I know he was drafted at 19 and he should have gone higher, but at Wayne's at 9, you know, we needed a cornerback when we took Prince. We don't really need one now as much. Is he better, would you say, than Prince was when coming out? And secondly, can he play the slot?
Yes, he can play the slot. Different body type than Prince. Prince has got more length. A little more of a larger frame than what Wayne's is. They're listing Wayne's off of the offseason numbers at 6 feet, 186. I'm curious about the six. I think he might be a little shorter than that, but they're saying he's 6 feet, 186, running a 4.23 in the 40. And again, I'm not big on combine numbers and workout numbers. I like to see how you play, not so much how you are in T-shirts and shorts.
It's only one facet.
Right. But the comments I wrote down about Wayne's after doing extensive film work on him, and I use these key words that I like to write down on guys, and I wrote tough, confident, press coverage, man coverage, can do all those things and do them well, does grab a lot. You know, he's one of those guys who gets very ticky-tack, like many wily veterans in this league who are around a while, like Sam Madison was. They learn how to do ticky-tack things, and they're always picking at the offensive receiver on the other side. Now, he's got to be careful about that because you'll draw more penalties in the NFL because they're looking for that stuff because they want offense. So he's going to have to clean that up a little bit. And reading the play, I thought maybe he wasn't exactly up to speed on all of his reads sometimes. But again, that's up to the coaches now.
Do you think, Paul, would he come in as our immediate slot starter?
Well, I think what happens is you bring him in and you say, okay, let's see what happens in training camp. If McBride is healthy and he looks as good as he did when he was playing here a couple of years ago, then probably Wayne's is the number four corner at the beginning of the season. And as he works himself in and gets acclimated, if he shows that he belongs in the third spot, they'll just move him up and swap him out with McBride.
Frank, the best parallel...
Don't you think it's a luxury, though, to take... I'm sorry, isn't it quite a luxury to take a third or fourth cornerback?
Guess what?
With
the way corners have been hurt on this
Correct.
Team the last few years, he might be starting week one.
Bingo, and we had a call earlier in the program, I believe it was Jeff, and we were talking about all the impactful players that we lost, Frank. So I think at the end of the day, there is no such thing as a luxury when you may take a player who's at a position where you think you have depth, because depth can disappear in the blink of an eye. I was going to throw out a parallel, Frank, to the point that Paul was touching on based on your question. They drafted Weston Richburg last year in the second round. He was a center in college, correct? They brought him into camp. They slotted him into a guard spot. You find a way to get your best talent on the field. So while he may not project, according to some of the breakdowns, to be a slot corner, doesn't mean adjustments can't be made. It doesn't mean you can't find the right scheme to get them on the field.
He certainly has the skill set.
We needed a lineman, though. We needed a lineman. We don't really need a cornerback as much.
Well, again, I kind of beg to differ. I think there is a certain need there for corner. I don't think that's as low on the priority chart as you do. But I will tell you this. If not Wayne's, there is quite a drop-off. I don't think you're going to be looking at any of the corners at the 9 spot.
He's the best 9 corner.
He's the guy.
Yeah.
In terms of value.
Well, I'm praying. I'm praying, guys, because we can't have another 11 and 12. And out of two drafts, we got one starter and a third receiver. I mean, we're headed for the bottom if that's the case.
Do yourself a favor.
We got one good one under our belt.
Do yourself a favor. Enjoy the first round, but watch the second round carefully. And watch that third round on Saturday. Giants having a big draft party at MetLife Stadium. Come down, enjoy yourself there. But watch those picks in rounds 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7, too. Because, as you said, as poor as you feel about a couple of the drafts you mentioned, you know, how good do you feel about, like, the 2007 draft when up and down that entire list, they got some production? So keep an eye on all that.
I tell people, not Shelton, guys. He's a nose tackle, and he's a two-down player. We don't need him. Even though he's a great player, I don't think
he's a top-ten value, but I wouldn't pick him either because I think the need component's different. Thank you so much for the call.
Thanks for the call, Frank.
I will say this, Lance. It's really, really imperative for the Giants at this stage of their development, as they've retooled this roster, they really do need to hit. More so than even in some other years on those later picks. So, folks, even though the number one pick is the one that gets all the headlines and you're going to see him on TV and hear him on the radio and everyone's going to be talking about who they draft first, you really want to keep an eye on those second and third day picks, because if the Giants are going to turn it around this year and become a playoff team, those second and third day picks are going to have to produce immediately. They're going to have to give them something. They can't afford to have them wait for a couple of years.
Well, if you look at the salary cap structure in this day and age, you have to get great value out of those late round picks, because when you have players for 4 years at a reasonable rate, Paul, it does wonders for your salary cap. And, you know, Frank hit on this, and we've emphasized this throughout the season and into the offseason. It should be the model of last year's draft. And think about some of the players that came in year one. Devon Kennard was the second fifth-round pick, and he could be a huge integral part of Steve Spagnuolo's defense.
He's probably going to start.
Correct. That's the type of thing. Matt Burhe, who knows what type of a role he's going to have.
He's going to get a chance to compete.
He was a fifth-round pick. Okay, let's move up a little, but we're still relatively late in the draft. Andre Williams, great value in the fourth round. He was a Heisman Trophy candidate. Yeah. He wound up starting half the games last year.
I think it's pretty safe to say that if the Giants get that kind of value out of their rookie class in 2015, they'll be in the playoff conversation. I don't know how far they're going to go. I don't know if they're going to get a spot. I don't know if they're going to be a deep into the playoffs kind of team, but they'll be in that conversation. They'll be in the race if this year's class produces like that one did.
Well, and the other thing that I want to throw out with respect to this division, and I think sometimes this gets lost because, you know, everybody focuses on the Giants, the nature of the NFC East, Paul. It has rotated. It's been cyclical each and every year. Name me the last time there's been a duplicate division winner. Now, I'm not throwing that out as a positive spin here. You know, the Giants obviously need to take care of their own needs, and they're going to work their best to put together a balanced roster. But it is very difficult in this division to build off of and maintain where you finished or what you did the previous season.
It's not the AFC East.
Correct.
The Patriots get penciled in every April.
So with that being said, I think every team goes in every year, Paul, with a very reasonable shot of winning the division or at least staying in the hunt. We've had years in this division where it's been a battle of teams that are all neck and neck. Some years there's been some lopsidedness in terms of the top and the bottom, but for the most part, there's been tremendous turnover. One year it's the Eagles, one year it's the Cowboys, one year it's the Giants. The Redskins won the division with RG3 in his rookie year. Yeah. So, you know, it's been very up and down.
Look, I go back to the old school core four elements. And I've talked about this a lot of times the last few months on the show, and it's one of the reasons why I do believe the Giants are at least in position to attempt to make that next step as a playoff team. You got to have the quarterback, you got to have the left tackle, you've got to have the pass rusher, and you've got to have the cover corner. If you've got those four elements, those are the four things you need to build the foundation of a playoff contender. Well, look at those guys here. Eli Manning, JPP, Will Beatty, Prince, and DRC. Okay, again, some injury questions a little bit littering that list, but I think you look at those guys and say, based on what they've accomplished, based on their resumes, the Giants are pretty good with those four elements. So now you say, okay, this team has a chance to do something moving forward. If you don't have those four elements, where are you? Now you're looking just to bail out water, and you're desperately, I mean, look, let me just use the Jets as an example, okay? They got the cover corner. They really don't have the pass rusher, I don't think. I mean, they've got a really good defense.
Front seven was pretty good last year.
Outstanding defense, one of the top three defensive lines in the league. As a whole, they're a great team defense, but do they have a dominant pass rusher right now? I don't know if they do. Do they have the left tackle? Yeah. They got the tackle. Do they have the quarterback? No.
Well, that's obviously the million-dollar question, yeah.
Okay, so you could argue they're 1.5 players short of the core four. you know, depending upon what you think about their pass rushers. I mean, that's a much worse position to be in.
In terms of how you value those specific positions that you just threw out. But based on that model, I mean, the Giants at least have pieces. Very few teams are set at the quarterback like the Giants are. So you're in the right position from that perspective. I want to close out the program with a few tweets here because a lot of people who can't get to the phones are very active on Twitter during the show. So let's at least throw out a few tweets and then we will wrap up shop here. We threw out the question at the beginning of the show. What players are you focusing on? Who do you want to make sure is fully healthy and ready to go here during the course of training camp, or at least players that you want to see make an impact? And at ColeWiss88 says, I'm expecting big things from Nat Burhe, Demontre Moore, and Devon Kennard. Kennard, you already saw quite a few big things at the tail end of last season. Moore, you mentioned, we were talking about him being one of those show-me type of players. And Burhe, right now he's one of two safeties on the roster, Paul. So, I mean, the opportunity is there for him to slide in and certainly make a name for himself. We were talking about Dwayne Harris earlier in the program. Ben Gruen at Gruen Ben. McAdoo will use Harris strategically. He's a home run hitter with a ball in his hands. I see him also catching screens he throws out.
Yeah, the wide receiver screen could definitely be part of the repertoire. And again, I stress to you folks, as we've said for weeks, Ben McAdoo has a bunch of things in these chapters of the playbook that we haven't seen because last year they just couldn't get to them for a lot of reasons.
There are a few more tweets here that I want to try to get at before we wrap up the program here. Ben, who I always butcher his last name, so I'm going to skip over the last name, but he is a passionate follower and listener to us, asked a question also speaking of the safety position. Do you guys still have confidence that Cooper Taylor can be the athletic tight end cover guy that he was drafted for?
I see him more as a strong safety in the box than a free safety. But I'll tell you this, until he proves he can stay on the field, and he's going to get that chance this training camp after two consecutive injury-plagued summers, you really don't know what to say about him.
That's the big question. I mean, durability, you want him to at least show some continuity, consistency getting on the field. That is priority number one. He does, though, have the body, the physique that I think can cause a challenge, correct,
long frame
for some of the opposing
but,
players.
But when I looked at his tape when he first came out of college, I saw him more as a run support guy and a straight-ahead guy. Really good on the safety blitz, by the way, but not so much with the range to be a cover guy. That's why I think he's more of a strong safety. I think he competes more with Nat Burhe than he does at the free safety spot.
If you look at the scouting report back out when he came out from Richmond, a guy that could come to the edge of the box and really help
straight
lay out
ahead,
the hits
downhill
and stop the run.
Defender.
That was what the MO was in terms of his game. It'll be interesting how he develops in terms of maybe becoming more of a cover guy during the course of OTAs and training camp. Well, appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets. Great stuff, as usual, from our callers, from our tweeters. We're with each and every weekday here on Giants.com. Big Blue Kickoff live at noon Eastern. We'll continue to cover OTAs. The schedule, remember, is going to come out Tuesday night, so we'll obviously be covering that on Wednesday's program moving forward. We'll continue to have guests covering the different prospects coming out of college, so stay tuned for that. I think we're going to cover Washington later this week.
Okay.
And a few other schools, so that is something to obviously look forward to, and we'll keep you posted on Giants.com, the website, with photos from OTAs as well as the conference calls that took place a little bit earlier
today. Off-season program. OTAs are a little bit down the road.
OTA, you know me. I'm looking ahead all of a sudden.
Gotta pay attention to the CBA.
I would expect you to be looking ahead, too. I mean, you're not necessarily worried about tomorrow. You're thinking 3 months down the road.
I'm always looking ahead.
With that being said, once again, appreciate everybody for tuning in. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. We'll speak to you tomorrow on Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Well, here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go, let's go.
Got through on the field. He's got through. 35-30.
Well, he gets no punch.
Touchdown, Giants!